From the book Ash, I am very cold. We have been standing in a pail for many hours. The count has been wrong twice, so we have been on our knees. My leg is numb from the snow that seeps through the uniform. My bladder hurts because I did not go to the lavatory yesterday, and I have not been yet today. I stare straight ahead, trying to think of the story of the snow angels. Ash told the story to me yesterday, but I am so cold that I cannot remember some of it. That thought makes me feel even colder. It fills my heart with panic. I have to get some paper. I have to write the story down so I don't forget it. But I search bodies before they go into the ovens. I do not know how to get paper anymore. The cough startles me. It burns my throat, the cough. It has been getting worse over the last few days. The women on my bunk think it is a cold. Some of them say it might even be pneumonia. I cannot go to the infirmary. I will not go to the infirmary. It is the waiting room for the chimneys, and I would only have 3 days to get better. Mangala. I look to the right, scared that one of the guards heard me cough. The guards are talking, smoking, and counting the people. They did not notice the sound of a girl coughing. A drop of pee spills, and I bite my lip, squeezing my body tight to keep it in. One day, they sent a woman to the firing wall for relieving herself before it was time. I have to wait. Gazelle. The name floats into my head as I wait, kneeling on the ground. Gazelle works in the infirmary. She would have access to paper. I don't know if she would give me any, but I have to try. I won't go to the fence today. I will go to the infirmary. If I hurry, I'd be able to go after my turn in the lavatory. The guards order us to stand. It is time. We walk as a group to the lavatory. I stand in line, waiting my turn, dancing, hoping that I can wait. Finally, when it is my turn, relief flows through me. I will not be killed for relieving myself. I leave the lavatory and duck out of sight around the building while the guards are looking away. I make it to the infirmary, but I am terrified of going inside. Mingala could be here. I look over my shoulder. This is a terrible place to be. Someone will definitely see me. I have no choice but to risk it. Carefully, I open the door. I do not see Mangala, but Gazelle stands at a patient's side. She gasps when she sees me. "What are you doing here?" she hisses. "I need some paper," she scowls. "Get out of here. I will give you bread if I can have some paper." Gazelle hesitates. I can tell the promise of bread weighs on her, makes her weaker. "Show it to me." I pull the piece of bread Ash gave me out of my pocket. She takes a deep breath. Suddenly, she turns and walks to the back of the barrack. She runs to me, looking at the patients, making sure that they are not watching, and stuffs a few sheets of white paper in my palm. I place the bread in hers, shove the paper into my pocket. "Thank you. Get out of here." Carefully, I open the infirmary door and run out. I make it back to the lavatory as everyone is leaving. It is time for work. But I have paper. I am thinking of Maman when I search the bodies today. I'm thinking of how she was strong. I think of her hands when they braided challah. I thought of her hands as magic. The woman in the wheelbarrow in front of me. If she had hair, she would look a little like Maman. The jaw of a dead person is hard to open. You have to push it hard. I open the woman's mouth, swipe my fingers inside. No jewels, no valuables. I search the rest of her body, looking in the cavities, no longer choked by vomit for doing so. I cannot hold any more shame. Shame has to have somewhere to settle, somewhere to hide out in. Half of my heart is frozen solid, and the other half is numb. I don't have room anymore for shame. I work without tears, and I do not imagine the lives. The sound of an ear-splitting scream cuts me off. I hesitate, look up, even though I know I am not supposed to. A woman is kneeled over, her arms wrapped around her stomach, her body bent. Her fist is jammed against her mouth, and she is racked with sobs. A guard walks to stand in front of her. What is your problem? The woman's sobs make answering impossible. It is her sister, another prisoner replies. She cannot search her. The guard looks from the woman crying to the wheelbarrow, where he sees the body of a pale girl younger than me. He looks back at the woman crying. I cannot see his expression, but I hear the firmness in his voice when he says, search her. The woman shakes her head, falls to her knees, bending her head. Her heart is broken. The sight of such emotion makes my own eyes tear up. I don't remember what it is like to really feel anything that strongly. The guard hesitates. After a few moments of silence, he calmly walks over and grabs the woman by her neck, pushing her forward. Search her. I think of the brave girl. I remember hearing the screaming of her agony. I remember seeing her body hanging from the post. I hope this woman is not brave. Courage here always loses. The woman's face pales. She is crying. I see actual tears falling down her face, and it makes my heart squeeze. When was the last time real tears actually fell from my eyes? Seeing the woman cry makes me feel like an animal, because I cannot feel sorrow anymore. I rarely think of Papa anymore, or of Joseph. I think of Maman more, but even the memory of my mother does not bring tears. I have a frozen heart, just like I have frozen feet. I do not want this woman's heart to freeze. She is a hero to me, because she can still cry. She still cares enough to cry. I don't feel my legs moving. I don't feel my feet moving. I don't hear myself saying, I will do it. I will search her for you. The only thing I know is that I am not walking anymore. I am on the ground and boots are kicking me. The blow to my temple hurts the worst. Still, I do not cry. When he is done, I hear the words, go back to work. But it feels as though I am underwater. One of my eyes are swollen shut. I open the other. The sobbing woman is kneeling on the ground beside the wheelbarrow. She is searching her sister. Her tears have stopped. I said, get to work. He is talking to me. I have to get up. But when I try to lift my head from the snow, it feels like a bomb goes off inside my brain, pushing my head back down to the snow. I try once more and manage to sit up, but the whole world is spinning. My stomach feels nauseous when I stand, and I am sure I will vomit. I make it back to the wheelbarrow, conscious that the guard is watching my every move. From the corner of my eye, I see the woman searching her sister, the guard watching her, making sure that she does a thorough job. I look down into my own wheelbarrow. I am somehow grateful for the cut on my forehead because, from it, blood is seeping down. The blood is warm, and it feels good. The guard who beat me for offering to help the woman hates me. He has stood behind my shoulder all day, spewing out dirty names. Twice, he threw rocks at me. I am glad it is time to stop working. I don't even mind standing in a pail right now, just because it means that he is no longer watching me. When a guard here makes it his job to haunt me, I don't breathe the whole day, because any little thing I do wrong can spell death. From the corner of my eye, I notice the guard who hates me talking to another Nazi. I move my eyes straight ahead again. I can hear the sound of my heartbeat drowning out the noise of the barking dogs. I slide my hand into the pocket of my uniform to feel the sheets of paper with the stories written on them. They help me calm my shaking nerves. The tall Nazi, the one who talked to the guard who hates me, starts pointing randomly at people. They have to get out of line. I hold my breath and try not to watch him. If I make eye contact, I could be chosen. He announces that the one selected will be moving to a different camp. I cannot move to a different camp, because then I would not see Ash. But somehow, I know. My stomach drops to my toes when his finger points directly at me. I take a deep breath and force my feet to step forward, out of line. There are a dozen or more of us standing out of line. We will get new jobs. I look to the side. It is a short walk to the place where my mom and I worked side by side. It is a short run to the fence where she died. I looked around. The infirmary is straight ahead. It is where I met Ash and Gazelle. I've been in some of the barracks, helping Gazelle save the lives of girls. I am leaving this work camp for another one. I do not know what that means, but I know it has to be better than what has happened here. You will get showers first, and then you will walk to the new camp, the guards tell us. We are too scared and nervous to ask questions. We know better. My stomach is hurting. It is a ball of nerves. I almost don't recognize Ash. He is standing with the guards. On his arm, there is a new band engraved with the word capo on it. I don't know whether to be overjoyed that he is here or saddened because he is a capo now. The capos are prisoners. They get extra food, but they have to hurt the other prisoners, call them names, and some of them are very, very mean. I think of the one to whom I gave the bread. He saved my life by moving me to the infirmary. He was a capo, too, but his kindness was unusual. He could have just as easily have had me killed. We are told to wait. There will be another selection from each barrack. As I stand in the line, Ash approaches me and winks. You too, little one. I swallow, nodding. He must see the fear in my eyes because he reaches out and gently touches my arm. I have another story. It's my very favorite one. Would you like to hear it? I nod. Yes. Who are you talking to, girl? The woman in front of me whispers. His name is Ash. We're all about to be Ash. There is no one there. She does not think I should talk to a capo, but she doesn't know Ash. Ash takes a deep breath and stands beside me, but he isn't looking at me. He looks straight ahead. This way, the Nazis do not think he is talking to me. Look around, little one. What colors do you see? My eyes scan the ground. I don't see any color, I tell Ash. Gray, brown. He nods. Once, in a very faraway land, there lived a man who could not see color. The only colors he could see were gray and black. Sometimes, when there was a bright light shining on something, he could see streaks of white. Ash pauses when someone passes by and smiles. But he could not see the color of anything else. He didn't know that an apple is red or that some birds are blue. He didn't even know what color the grass is. And he had never seen a rainbow. He was colorblind? Ash nods. Yes. Everything in his world was gray, black, and sometimes white. Oh, but he wanted to see the colors. He had friends who had told him that they are real, that they exist. His friends had tried to describe the sharpness of red, the softness of pink, the brilliance of yellow. But he could not really understand what they were talking about. The guards told us to move again. We walked to the next barrack and were ordered to stop while they made more selections. One day, the man went on a journey. It was a special, special journey. He told himself he would find color. My heart is beating faster again as we keep moving. The snow is hard to walk through, and when I look up, I see the black smoke rising from the chimneys, black and brown and gray. Those are the only colors I see. I remember other colors, but I can't see them. I don't know what the color orange or blue or pink, I don't know anymore what those colors make me feel. He didn't know how to find the color. He thought the best place to start looking for one was a rainbow. Maybe, he thought, if he could touch a rainbow, it might help him see the colors. He wanted to be all around the colors, to be immersed inside of them. He was especially hopeful to see the color yellow, because people told him that that was the color of light. Ash's voice is quiet, soft, and I have to listen carefully to hear him at all. He keeps talking as we walk. One night, a storm comes. It's thundering and lightning, and the rain is coming down in sheets. The man is excited. A rainbow, he'd heard, always comes after the storm. Sure enough, when the storm is over, he hears his friends and his neighbors talking about how beautiful the double rainbow in the sky is. It's there, he thinks excitedly. When he looks up into the sky, he can see the arch of the rainbow, but it looks gray to him, only a little darker than the grayness of the sky. We are at the last barrack in this row. We stop walking so more people can join our group. But Ash does not leave my side. It takes him hours to find the end of the rainbow, but he does find it. Is it near the place your star fell? I ask softly. Ash smiles. Very close to it indeed, little one. When he found the end of the rainbow, listen carefully to what happens now. When he found the end of the rainbow, he reached out to touch it. At first, he didn't feel anything out of the ordinary. At first, it felt just smooth. But then, out of nowhere, an explosion came. Ash bends his head towards me. The explosion made his body burn. He could smell weird scents, scents he'd never smelled before. The burn started up his arms, engulfed his legs. He was scared. But then, just when he thought he couldn't take the pain any longer, a great pop sounded right in front of him, and a burst of yellow shot up like lava. He reached out and could touch it. Yellow stained his hands, his arms, his face. It was all around him, warm to the touch. The pain of the fire subsided. It became less, and he was surrounded by beautiful color on every side. There were reds and blues and yellows, purples and oranges. The world was beautiful. We're going to give you a shower before you start your new work, a guard announces. When you go inside, there are cubbies. Take everything off and put them in a cubby. Remember which cubby you put your clothes in so that you will be able to find them after your shower. I look at Ash. He reaches out and takes my hand. He smiles at me. It's going to smell a little funny, little one, but I'm ready for the rainbow. I do not find it strange that Ash walks into the building with me, because he promised that he will be wherever I need him to be. I find the warmth of his hand comforting. As we walk into the showers, I whisper in a voice that shakes, "What color do you want to see first, Ash?" I hope the rainbow is a kaleidoscope. I want to see them all at the same time. What about you? I swallow, shaking, breathing in the faint smell of gas. I tip my head up to see the vent and say, "I want to see the color of yellow. I want to see light."